Hi, HR Nation. Welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives from the world's leading global brand. Genuinely really, really excited about this episode. We're joined by Fabio Rose, Chief HR Officer at Dasa. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, and you? How are Chris?
Good, I'm good.
A pleasure being here.
I feel like we could, beforehand, for everyone that was waiting to get in, we've been talking about, there we go, the kids come in.
That's normal now,
by the way.
It's a bit late for you to wake up.
For those that are listening and can't see the video, the kids came running over, which we're all used to at this point. my two-year-old loves running in the room during the calls. But listen, firstly, how are you? How are the family? How are things?
I think everything is great, as great as possible. You just mentioned about us getting used to this new dynamics of family and work together, and it's quite meaningful, the fact that the boy comes and I am afraid of hugging him
because you're
not
on camera,
to derail the conversation we're having.
It shouldn't be. Yes.
This absolutely has an impact on my fatherhood, on my relationship with him, because you couldn't see him. He was not on camera. He was saying, I just want to give you a hug. I just want to hug you. But we're doing great. Now, totally settled back in Brazil, in São Paulo, and having fun.
Amazing. I think I'm pretty sure that you're my first guest from Brazil as well, so it's an honor.
What an honor
to have you on. Honor for me, I'm saying, to have you has to have you on the show as well. And I remember first coming across your profile, and I wasn't aware of the business too much, the brand, but when I looked into it, I was amazed. I was like, whoa, how do I not know about didn't I know about this business? So for people that aren't aware of the organization, tell them a little bit more, because it's fascinating.
Great, sure. So Dasa is actually the largest health ecosystem in Latin America. It's not necessarily widely known and recognized because we just started to work on the branding piece. We have recently declared the organization as an ecosystem and combined 80 brands. We have 80 brands. I think it's even more than 80 brands all together under the same umbrella and under the same principle of working health, developing health, innovating on health based on an ecosystem which is driven by patients and not the system. What I mean by that is it's a very complex organism, which includes doctors, hospitals, insurers, brokers, government. It's very well, very strongly, I would say. Not well, maybe sometimes it's well regulated as well, but strongly regulated. And it's health. It's not a less impactful, if I would say, or serious type of business, which branding has to be very conscious and ethical.
Yeah.
So we are a group composed by 8,000 labs.
8,000 labs. And how many employees?
Sorry, 1,000 labs. 997.
So not to be exact.
16 hospitals. With different compositions and specialties. We have a genetics company as well. We're mapping the DNA in Brazil, because most of the studies we have are based on the European DNA or the American DNA more recently, or the Japanese. So we're working hard to get like a Brazilian DNA mapped. We have 1,000 people working on digital innovation in squads focused on health, on creating the platform that will orchestrate all these elements.
Wow.
It's close to 50,000 people in the organization. We run 300 million exams So think about that as data. Yeah. So 300 million exams per year. We deal with close to 200,000 doctors making interventions, operations, etc. Wow. Performing medicine, performing health every year. So we're combining all these elements together to create not only an improvement, a significant improvement on curative medicine or preventive medicine, but go through predictive medicine and
start putting band-aids, excelling health. Rather than just putting a band-aid on or treating the symptoms, focusing on.
Exactly.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thanks for sharing that, because that's one of the things I love about my jobs is I'm always coming across different organizations that I'm like, how do I not know about these businesses out there that are doing, literally saving lives, right? And changing people's lives. And many of them I don't come across as well. And I was fascinated. Also your background, you know, I know many of your peers in your previous organization as well. And so I wanted to share that with everyone. But before we jump into more in the business, I left our last conversation and it really stood out to me, not just amazing artwork around that you shared, but your story. And I think it's super, and I want to share your personal story from your childhood to where you got to now, because I feel like it's something that was super super inspiring and a story worth telling. So can you walk us through that?
Yeah, sure. I'm glad to do that. I'll try to be concise. So I'm a single child of a very dysfunctional family, as I normally say. Family was set for me to run a normal, regular, full of privileges type of life. A white boy growing in a third world country in development and on the lucky side. I shared with you, my father was alcoholic, and then things were a bit out of control. I was also exposed very early in childhood to I would say, diversity in mm-hmm. all senses. My father was also bisexual, so we dealt with this situation in a different world than the one of today.
Yeah.
Was never an issue for me. The issue was with the alcoholism and with that misbehavior, which brought a lot of challenges, which I went through and started working early in a, I was 16, maybe.
16, yeah.
With construction. So I was helping loading trucks for 6 months, 7 months. Then I joined a very small shop, like a street shop selling clothes, like brandless shop selling clothes for another year. It was like more survival mode more than consciously entering my professional development. I was there.
So let's stop there for a second, because I want to touch upon that. So the reason I wanted to share that with everyone listening is we have this preconception of some of the leaders that we see, like yourself and many others out there. And we realized, unfortunately, we both experienced a household with domestic violence. Yep. All right. And in many ways left is in it from your story and us to fend for ourselves in some ways. And like you, for me, I needed to get a job as soon as possible to support myself and the family. And it wasn't a choice. I didn't want to do these things. You know, I got a job because I needed a job as mm-hmm. well. But what did you learn from those moments that you feel that's kind of impacted where you are now and the journey?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think you stopped quite smartly. And then you said it was not a choice. We had to have something, right? Yeah, my learning is that there is always a choice. That's a learning.
Mm-hmm. You mean a choice you mean like a choice to be a victim of your circumstances or change it? Is that
that's a type of choice
mm-hmm.
that we consciously or not end up making. So we could choose among several pathways that were there. And we always have these like subtle orders, not necessarily so obvious ways of moving and growing in life, and it's not necessarily linked to a challenging situation, but choices. They're there, and then you take one of them and you go.
You're right. I always talk to Shane. One thing I jump. I always take to my talk to my business partner Shane about our friendship group growing up, and there was a choice of selling drugs where we lived because that's how you make quick money, or steal cars, or you know, a life of crime basically, which mm-hmm. was very yep. quick, very tempting because it was very fast money, fast cash.
Yep.
There, yep. Or go the longer route where you work a job where you make minimum wage, and it's you know, whilst your friends are partying on a weekend, you're working on Saturday and Sunday, so your childhood yeah. is basically working.
Yeah.
And you know, we did those. Shane used to clean the streets whilst in college, whilst in university, right? I used to work in a kitchen as a kitchen, whatever they wanted me to do in a kitchen, whether it was clean plates or do whatever they wanted me to do as a 15, 16 year old, just working in a kitchen. And I was so exhausted, I would put three chairs together and just fall asleep. My break time was to sleep because I was exhausted, and then to do another 8 hour shift, right? So there was a choice. I was very Absolutely. Tempted to take that one. Very, very tempted to take that one, but we took that one along the way. So there are the choices are already there. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. The one point for us to consider seriously is that, and important here not to mislead, there are contexts and situations where people have the choice to make,
mm-hmm.
but they're not free to make that choice.
I'm with you. Yes.
What I mean is, if you talk to a 7-year-old boy whose father is like works on cleaning streets, and you ask him what is his dream, the likelihood of him saying I want to clean streets is very high. He's not free for choosing his life. That's what I mean. Mm. So the context, the social context also interferes in this, sure. these elements. But yes, there is a choice in terms of not making yourself a victim, as you perfectly said. I'm not sure if it was conscious or not, but I chose not to play the victim role. It doesn't fit to me. I mean, but anyways, I continued working on the selling clothes. It went well.
It went well.
Yeah. And one day, I was good at folding.
I bet you like you had the technique down, right?
I was showing my wife. Look, this is how we fold pants. Yeah. There were two types of folding. One if it was like to be exposed, and the other if it went to warehouse. Anyways, now, but it's true. I mean, it's learning. I ended up working on a company that was selling cable TVs. The cables were like being installed in Brazil, etc. So it was a beautiful challenge here because I had to sell the product and the service, my portfolio of new channels and better quality, but I could not show none of this because it was not available. And with the additional challenge of mindset shift, now you pay for watching TV.
Oh, of course, because back then people don't realize. When I grew up, there was no paid until Sky, which is what we have here, was the first paid service. Before that, it was just the BBC broadcast.
Sky was a competitor.
Oh,
Sky
okay.
was a competitor. Oh, yeah. Okay, Sky yeah. was the bad one. We were the good ones. No, Sky, all respect. Anyways, yeah. and also went well. So I learned about that, about this like. Again, not necessarily very structured, but about consumer behavior, about people, about content, why people would like this or that content.
Also, the communication skills, amazing sales, right? Like, you know, communicate people.
So I learned that a lot, and then they moved me to selling collective contracts, like places where the product would be publicly exposed, like bars or condos or... whatever clubs, yep. whatever. Mm-hmm. And I started.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024. And the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
Studying something because I realized that I would have to go to a university and get graduated in something. And the one thing I could do and pay and that would not disrupt my routine, I mean, my commitment.
Did you do that? Go on, sorry. Finish what you're saying.
No. It was like a C-class university. I studied pedagogy because it was the available course.
What was that? I missed that. What did you study?
Pedagogy, education.
What's that? Sorry, I'm not hearing it properly.
You have psychology and you have pedagogy. Pedagogy.
Oh, I've never come across that. I don't know how I've not come across that before. Okay.
At least I can share something
new today. Everyone else is already Christy. How do you not know that?
Okay. And then that I was there and studying, and at a certain point I had to quit my job to go for an internship so that I could have a content-related experience and get graduated. Mm-hmm. And I joined Bank Boston, which was simply first class. The slogan was simply first class. And I was simply last class, man. I was that thing, that guy, that...
Yeah.
And it started working relatively well. And I remember I started...
Did you feel insecure?
Total imposter. But I joined the learning and development department, and one of my first tasks was to follow up to accompany the 5 top universities for Bank Boston to send their top talents to those programs. Man, and it was dark blue, dark green, dark gray, colorful, and white. Harvard, Wharton, MIT, Columbia, and the colorful was...
Oh, so how do I say it? I've never heard of that before. Okay.
Yeah, it was brochures because there was no electronic media. So
of course,
I was
collecting
the brochures, the physical ones, for then recommending to the top talent. So they go and do this MBA and we pay for them $90,000. I say, I would never make this money in my whole life. Wow. And the colorful one was INSEAD, which was the only one, not American, was colorful, not one color, and you open the brochure, there was a black woman playing piano. And I remember all these details because I...
How many years ago is this?
I was 20, I don't know, for 24 years ago, 23 years ago. But I remember because I used to bring these books with me home to study English because I did not speak English, anywhere in English. And I had these memories that I share with you so vividly now because of a deja vu I had when I was going to INSEAD to give a speech on leadership for the Brazilian students on the MBA. And I was there and I realized I have been here before, but not as a student because I was at the same time doing my master's. I was studying my master's. I ended up running my master's.
So you paid for your master's degree. Yourself?
No, the company paid for
me. You paid for your education before that yourself whilst working?
I did. Yeah. The first one I did. Mm-hmm. Actually, my aunt paid for me. I couldn't pay it.
Nice. Yeah.
And then I ended up here. So that was like 2000, 2001. Then in 2005, I was head of HR in Chile. I had at that point moved from Bank Boston to Novartis, worked 4 years in Brazil. Then I moved as head HR in Chile for 3 years. Then I moved as head of HR in Venezuela. That was crazy for 3 years.
So when did your son come into the picture and you had a family?
In Switzerland, in my next stop.
Oh, really?
Like almost 3 years in Venezuela. Oh. We moved to Switzerland.
Wow.
And Pedro was born in Switzerland. We stayed there for 4 years.
Was that when you were Unilever then?
No, no, it was L'Oreal.
L'Oreal. I don't know why I said Unilever.
Oh, Sky.
Yeah, sorry.
Is the bad one. Yes. Unilever is the bad one. L'Oreal is the good one. I'm kidding.
I know you're joking. Sorry, I just got I got confused for a second there. You're L'Oreal, yeah.
Dear colleagues from Unilever, your company is beautiful. I have to say, all respect. It's a great company.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I could not miss the joke. Anyways, I was with
L'Oreal.
Novartis in Switzerland. Uh-huh. Then L'Oreal brought me back to Brazil. Mm-hmm. Carol, my wife, was pregnant of Antonio. So Antonio was born in Rio. We stayed 6 years in Rio. Then we moved to New York for 2 years. And then Daza hired me and brought me back to Brazil 1 year ago.
Thanks so much, by the way, for sharing your journey. Like, I'd love to for you to share more about I know you're going through a big cultural change that you're leading right now. And I'd love to, which kind of links to a lot of what we're talking about. Really, I'd love for you to share more about what you're doing at the moment and the why behind this.
Great. So we're combining all these companies that the group had into one big ecosystem. So till 1 year ago, we used to have like 4 or 5 or even 6 different types of performance management model. Compensation schemes, benefits,
all
whatever. You think of like everything. So 16 hospitals, when you say, okay, it's the INPAR, which was the mm-hmm. integrated net of hospitals. Okay, but it's 16 hospitals. Each of them is a universe in itself.
Talking different languages from a technical point of view.
And processes and payrolls. Anyways, so what we thought is that there is no way you would orchestrate all these elements without creating a culture. Mm-hmm. I don't need to find the meaning, like a synonym to that. We all understand a little what culture is. So how to invent this reason? Because culture is somehow an invention, right? So how do we create this thing, this environment, where all of us will feel we belong, and how not to fake one?
Well, that's a good point.
And we started evolving, and I think that this is one of the reasons I like this process a lot, the way we did it. We involved 1,000 people. So through big researches or web conferences with artificial intelligence, and we interviewed hundreds of leaders, 400 leaders. I don't have all the numbers by heart. But we've started digging into that place where people used to be to find not only what they were bringing along or what we could collectively decide not to bring, to leave behind, and what else would have to be. When we combine all these elements together, what else would have to be created? What new characteristics, values we would like to create for this company that we now express professionally, if I can say, and this environment that we create. And we did it based on philosophy, based on quantics, with two very creative partners, consultants that we brought in, and we developed something that was for us. It was not like something that you take.
Let's copy. Let's copy what someone else
is
doing.
This is what I would mean, like by faking a call.
Yeah, and a lot of people do that, right? They're like, oh, it works for them. For us. And when you said 1,000, you brought that's a combination of different business, all of the people from each of those business units.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we were interacting with through different means to collect information and create this diagnostic and then the narrative around where we're coming from and where we're going.
Yeah.
The issue is that the issue is not the issue, but an additional challenge during the pandemic.
Oh, you're doing all of this during the pandemic?
Oh, 1 year ago.
Oh, wow.
Almost 50%, I think it's a bit more than 50% of all employees down to N2 with less than 1 year
wow.
of company, which means that all these guys joined during pandemic. So culture is very relative. Culture is...
It's being shaped. It's being shaped in real time. 50, yeah.
And the other 50% was coming from different parts of the organization with different cultures. So half of them, half of us, were newcomers. The other half were coming from one of these companies of the group.
Mm.
Not having the type of dynamics where you interact and partner together in the normal life. So DASA was something being created during pandemic with a new brand, IPO, recreating values, culture, narrative, performance, everything.
Whilst
if you add
that.
It on top, the turnover, so 30% turnover, 30-something percent turnover worldwide. So besides the turnover, what I used to say is that what we are observing is companies not necessarily paying enough attention to the risk of losing their souls. Because if half of the people joined without having the chance to feel the smell of the place, to recognize the warmth of the colleague's hug, haven't experienced asking for help, don't recognize the smell of the cleaning product used in the toilet of the company, the sound of the lift, which is the one who takes the longest because serves those floors. I mean, I'm just...
No, you know, I get it. Yeah.
Those elements, if half of them don't know, we need to be very careful because the other half might be forgetting.
Hmm. And also, because even digitally, they don't. Yeah, even digitally, they don't even know where to go. Even if they have a question, or they need, or they will ask for help. It's like where, how, who, you know,
exactly.
Or to do that.
And one thing is because it happened to me. So I'm the head of HR, entering the organization in a company in a position that was not existing before. So I came because the position was created, and I joined in this middle.
You joined and during of this. What a time to walk into a CHRO role.
Exactly.
And just are you sure? Did you know? Did you know what you was getting into? You couldn't have known. You couldn't
absolutely
have.
Absolutely not. And I was inviting my colleagues, my partners, to help with the culture project. I said, look, we're going to do the project we believe that is the right for humanizing organizations. We need to offer something different to what we find around, because I believe it. These guys, they also believe fundamentally.
I'm conscious of time.
I told my team, essentially, guys, what we now have to deal with two different dynamics: the dynamic of us working remotely as a team and working presentially as a team. It is different. The way the team relates to each, it's different. And I have no recipe to how to coordinate both.
And I had the same conversation with my team. I'm not going to pretend I have the answer, but let's figure it out together. I want to ask you though, what were those things that you identified that shaped the culture, right? How do you define culture at DASA? Because I'm conscious of time and I would love to hear, unless you're still going through that process, but you know, if you had to describe your core values, etc., what were those?
Yeah. So we have created this model. I think it's more than sophisticated. It's a beautiful, simple model with six values, which are focused on people. On the centered, on humbleness, on servant leadership, on understanding metaphysically, if I can say, what leadership is about.
Mm-hmm.
So we always think of, and this is one of the insights that I really don't want to lose, which is we always hear and talk and think and experience leadership as an influence element, right? Leadership is about influencing. Yeah, okay. I start to doubt if that's that. Mm-hmm. I think that leadership, at least the more senior you get, is about being influenced and know how to be influenced is not obvious, and depending on your role and your context in the organization can generate a way more energy for changing, for innovation, for inspiration, and etc. So I think that one of the key aspects of this model that we created in the culture, okay, people orientation, patient orientation, innovation, excellence, qualities related to serving people end to end. I think about thinking metaphysically on the exercise of leadership, on getting influenced, on okay, helping others, but asking for help.
Yeah.
Knowing how to deal with the mistakes that we will make, because if we are putting ourselves in a place to innovate, we will make mistakes.
Most of the time.
Not possible to think of innovation without making mistakes. No, exactly. But let's assume that we're making mistakes trying to make things right.
Exactly.
So if that is the case, how we take the best of the mistakes we make? How do we honor the mistakes we make?
Yeah.
And offer that to the culture, back to the culture. And I think that these elements are the ones that I would highlight in our culture and values. And we're compensating leaders about how humble they.
So you're directly linking back. Again, you have to create the systems and compensation, et cetera, and link it back. Because a lot of companies, they try and do what you're talking about, but they still have legacy systems and processes which do the opposite. Then you're kind of just competing against. Everything needs a fundamental shift. Rethinking.
It's a collaborative way of because the elements that you're compensating, even if you're assessing them individually, these are about collective behaviors.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Love that. Before I let you go, I want to jump into our quick fire round. So I do this with every guest. This is a quick fire. 30 seconds for each question.
But survive.
You'll be all right. That's fine. So the first question is: what are your hobbies and passions outside of the office? I think I know. I think I know the answers on a few of these.
Yeah. Art, graffiti, art, music, gardening. I love planting, gardening, etc. This and my kids, obviously, playing with them.
Can you briefly tell the story? Because I just reminded of the piece of artwork that your uncle. Because it just popped into my brain. Yeah. Can you just briefly, I know I was saying quick fire round, but just tell that story because it was very inspiring for me.
Yeah. When things went wrong, I mean, when they were very, very bad at home and my parents were having their conversations, they used to send me to my grandparents' house. And in that house, the house was full of paintings, as the one Chris is seeing here. Mine is likewise. And my grandma used to put me to bed, and I couldn't fall asleep because of the silence, because of the peace, and I wanted to leave that sensation. So I would go around and look at each of the paintings of my uncle. My uncle is a very good painter, and I could recognize like the phases. The traces, the colors he would be using in each of them, the
style,
the writings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then one of them I got with me, and that became my transitional object. So every place, every country I would be moving, that was the one thing I would bring with me in the airplane. That painting, that piece of art, and that means a lot to me. That was the story. It's a big one, otherwise I would bring it for you to see, but for you, Chris, to see. But
When you look at that painting, how does it make you feel?
Peaceful. Mm-hmm. Thanks for reminding me this consciously, Chris.
Yeah. I feel like when you told me the story, what I took away from it about the fact that you travel, despite the change, the chaos, the new transition, the new journey, that's the peaceful. Like, you can look at that painting and just forget about everything else for that one moment and forget about the fact that you had the domestic violence at home. Yeah. And all of those things, right? And that you're in a new country, in a new job, and it's scary. And that made me think on the way home after our conversation. And I just wanted to share that with everyone. I feel like it's important.
Yeah.
As well, so I'll go back to the quick fire round as well. But the fact that, again, it stuck with me, right? We spoke months ago. The fact that your story, it made an impression on me even months ago. That was in the back of my mind. If you could click your fingers and change one thing about human resources, what would you change?
Courage.
More courage needed? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I think that we're already enough aware. We know what we need to do. And it takes courage because it's about hacking somehow the system. We need to humanize the scheme. And not all leaders are ready for that. But it's not about waiting for the next leader to come. It's about preparing the whole organization for the change that is already taking place. And if I could click, I would like I have, including myself, we are all very courageous to lead the transformation that we know we have to, which includes disrupting HR itself.
Love that. How do you think that your family, your wife, your family and friends, your kids would describe what you do for a living?
Oh my God.
So if I ask your kids right now, and what does dad do for a living?
My kids, when Pedro, he was like following the conversations with Daza that I would move to Daza. And one day he say, Daddy, you moving to Daza? I say yes. Oh my God, I thought you would be moving to NASA.
He thought you was moving to NASA, not.
I'm so sorry.
I've let you down.
They say, and it's funny because now they describe what they see, right?
Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
The same question 2 years ago would be completely different because it would be in the imagination. Now they see and have some conclusion. I think my kids say I solve other people's problems.
Yeah, I love it.
And my wife would, I think she would say I create problems.
For other people.
To solve.
Yeah. Love it. What legacy do you want to leave behind for your family?
For my family, a sense of social responsibility, a good notion of how privileged we are, an acceptance for laziness in terms of doing something that will really impact the world in making it more fair. They see me trying and I hope they stick with it.
Yeah, love that. What would you say is the biggest investment that you've made in yourself personally?
Personally?
Yeah, what the biggest investment you've made in yourself?
Therapy?
Yeah.
Skateboarding. No, I'm skateboarding. I still need to practice.
You skateboard?
Yeah.
You know, I skate, right?
Come back. Yeah, skateboard. But I need to come back.
I'll teach you. Don't worry.
Therapy version.
I skate, so I just started again, but I used to skate a lot. But I've got these are skateboarding trainers. So I'm wearing them right now. So I'm with you. Oh, you got the deck. I love it. Yeah. But you mentioned therapy, by the way, so I would love to hear briefly about that. Obviously, about is it a huge investment?
I believe that having the chance to, it's a choice, right? Having the chance to look at ourselves sometimes with the same eyes we used to look others at in the world is quite facilitated with the help of professionals. And it's one of the big sources of insights on ourselves and getting in peace and in touch with who we are. I mean, looking at the mirror. I read something from Manfred Guedevry, and he was saying that happiness is about looking at the mirror and being in peace with what you see. And he was talking about the jester role in organizations. Yeah. And he say, I am the one carrying the mirror. And I think that someone we need help in yeah, having sometimes we need someone to carry the mirror for us and help interpreting what we see. Mm-hmm. That's the I think the biggest investment I've made.
Love that. Have you ever considered walking away from HR and pursuing it? And pursuing
every day.
Really?
Every day. Yeah. Sometimes I wonder if I work in HR. in a broader sense.
What do you mean by that? Work?
Man. We have products, we have services, we have customers, we have budget, we have competitors, we have challenges. We don't have a P&L because we have no profit, but it's a machine. It's a machine as a company. And when I say I'm not sure, I wonder if I work in HR is what is so different in human resources versus marketing versus innovation, the area of innovation, or controlling, or whatever. Yeah. So if you look at the HR operations, it's controlling. If you look at HR products, culture, it's innovation. So that's what I meant. But every day I consider doing something else, and I do.
And are you saying that because it's out of frustration?
No, absolutely. It's a privilege being in HR. I'm not sure I would choose a different area to be manifesting my mm-hmm. professional self in organizations.
I see.
But it's about other things. When I say other things, maybe NGOs, maybe...
Okay.
That's what I think.
Maybe yeah. create some of your own art.
Being a professional musician.
Yeah. I really appreciate your honesty, by the way, about the, you know, there are days that I would want to walk away because it's not easy.
Yeah, no.
Again, something I hear behind closed doors, but no one talks about.
You know, and this is how life is, right, Chris? You have great days, you have bad days, you have great calls, you have great conversations. There are days you're more inspiring than others, days you're more inspired than others, and every day you want to skip a little. And it's just also a way of saying and to be a bit provocative, but don't get fully grounded, mm-hmm. because that sometimes there's derails our capacity to fly. We were talking about kids.
Yeah.
It's not always about legs and arms and brains and heart. It's also about wings.
I think that's a good place to end it. I love that as well. And well, I suppose that there is one more question. You kind of answered it away, but I would say, you know, if there is, you know, one piece of advice you'd give to HR leaders of tomorrow that will be sitting in your seat, what would that be? I feel like you've already added so much value, but if there is something else that you could just distill for them.
Yeah. Ooh. I don't want to sound ridiculous, but the more I read and study about leadership, more I realize that this is an act of love. So my piece of advice is, don't be shy in showing love. Love is a serious thing. It's not about passion. Yeah, it's also about passion. Mm-hmm. Passion for results. You can say passion for results. Okay, but you cannot say love. I love results.
Yeah.
You love people.
Well, listen, man, it was been a real pleasure. Honestly, I've really enjoyed it. And I just trying to, you know, one of the reasons I started the show is I wanted to bring these stories and journeys and the real stories and authentic journeys. And I really appreciate your vulnerability, you sharing, giving back. Can't wait for us to come and meet. We'll go skateboarding. We'll paint our own canvas together, and we're both doing it now in our lives, right? In many ways, we're painting our own canvas and our own art piece of what we're doing. And I look forward to doing this again soon. All right.
Yes, and don't even dare coming near Brazil without letting me know.
All right, you can host, yeah. Though I'm coming to stay with you.
Okay. Good. Wow, it will be a pleasure.
No worries. See you later, man. I have to run now, but enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll
me
see
too.
You soon. All right.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for everything.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.